Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you have a scary story you would like to submit, email it to me at zackbabytv@gmail.com. Make sure to check out my online store. I have a lot of cool cryptid, spooky, and funny shirts, as well as mugs and other essentials. Now, let's get spooky. In August of 2005, two of my peers and I received a bizarre yet intriguing email. None of us knew the true identity of the employer, but we were offered a boatload of cash for a week's worth of work at a dig site in the Gobi Desert. As you could imagine, there's not much life out in the good old Gobi, but that hasn't always been the case. In prehistoric times, the Gobi was somewhat plentiful with fauna, so it wasn't that surprising that we were told that we were looking for fossilized remains. We arrived by helicopter on the 6th of September that year. The camp was roughly an hour away from the dig site and looked more military than research. I shrugged it off. Typically, private contractors enjoy a more modern, sleek look compared to your usual cloth tents. On our first night, we were introduced to Rachel and Gary, the head of the camp and the techie, as well as a few other researchers, but they were all in separate bunks as us, and we didn't converse with them much. Overall, sure, the whole thing was a bit weird, but nothing that raised any alarms. Everything changed, however, when our first morning there, our Jeep overheated on the way to the dig site. We were already the last crew to leave camp that morning, and were certainly not excited about the further delay.
"Screw me," Randall's thick Australian accent boomed throughout the Jeep.
"What the hell? Why are we stopping, Randy?" I blurted out, pulling my head back inside the vehicle.
"Crap!
Sorry, fellas. We're gonna have to call for some backup."
"What the hell is that supposed to mean?" Eric slapped back.
"She's gone belly up. The engine has just shit itself." Randall punched the steering wheel, pressing the horn.
"Take it easy, Randy. There's gotta be something we can do," I said. "We got water and whatnot. We'll be fine, but we do need a radio in for some help." Randall raised his hat and wiped the sweat pouring from his brow.
"Brilliant," Eric mumbled as he sloshed back into the back seat, tipping the brim of his baseball cap over his eyes. Randall picked up the radio and called back to camp.
"Oi, we're gonna need another vehicle out here pronto," he said, holding the small black box up to his mouth.
"Ah, shoot. Did your Jeep overheat?" Rachel's English voice echoed throughout the speaker.
"Frickin' looks like it. We got water and food, but it's bloody hot out here. What's your ETA?
"No shoot, Sherlock. Gary should be able to get another Jeep out there in about a half an hour. He'll get you guys fixed up in no time."
"Sounds good, Rachel, thanks. Over and out."
Randall hung up the radio and turned to face Eric and I. "Well, sounds like help is on the way," Randall said with a visibly forced smile, trying to cheer us out of our grumpy moods.
"Gosh darn it, I gotta piss. Let me through," Eric said as he sat up, pushed past me, and made his way out to the passenger side door.
"Jesus, not much of a morning person is old Eric," Randall said, cracking a grin.
"Ha ha, not much of one at all. Dang, it's hotter than hell out here though, isn't it?"
I laughed back as I took a swig from my thermos, which was full of iced coffee. There was no way in hell that I was going to be drinking a hot cup of Joe in the desert.
"Dang straight. So do you have any idea what we're out here looking for anyways?"
"Hell if I know. From what I've gathered, it seems to be some rich son of a you-know-what looking for something that's probably not even here," I said, taking another swig.
"What do you mean, mate?" Randall tilted his head in confusion.
"We have worked with private contractors before, usually collectors or the elite, who felt the need to decorate their homes with exotic fossilized ferns rather than houseplants. However, the expedition we found ourselves on was much more cloak and dagger than anything we have ever encountered previously."
"I don't know," overheard Rachel talking to one of the other guys this morning back at camp. "She said something about some old legend."
You frickin' kidding me? I did not go through 6 years of classes at Oxford to be some frickin' Bigfoot hunter."
"I know, but hey, if they're willing to pay us six figures, I'm up for roughing up in the desert for a week," I chuckled as I began to stare out the window.
My face dropped the grin in an instant,
What is it, mate?
Randall leaned over, trying to see what I was looking at.
Where's... I stuttered.
Holy crap! Where is that son of a...
Upon Randall realizing what I had noticed, I jumped out of the Jeep and began hollering for Eric.
Eric! Where are you, you grouchy bastard?
Randall yelled as he cupped his hands around his mouth.
Eric! Eric!
I shouted as well, but to no avail. The both of us circled around the Jeep, calling out for Eric, but there was no response. However, I quickly noticed that Randall had become fixated on something in the distance, so I attempted to get a look at what had piqued his interest.
What the... is that?
Those were the only words that fell out of my mouth before Randall gave me the look of horror and then took off running.
Eric! Eric, we're coming, mate!
Randall screamed as we took off running for what had caught our eyes. Sprinting, we threw clouds of sand in the air behind us. By the time we arrived at the pair of legs sticking out of the ground, the only thing left above the scorching sand was Eric's calves.
What the hell, man? Peter, grab a leg!
Randall shouted back at me as he bent down and wrapped his fingers around Eric's left calf.
Oh, screw me!
I grabbed Eric's right calf and began to pull as Randall did. As we pulled, something opposed our tugging.
Is something pulling him under?
Randall finished my sentence. We pulled harder.
All right, come on, Eric. Get up here, mate.
Randall heaved, his voice filled with panic as we both yanked on our friend's legs.
Come on!
I yelled through clenched teeth. Like some morbid game of tug-of-war, whatever was pulling on Eric's top half suddenly let go, sending us flying onto our backs as we succeeded at pulling Eric out of the sand. Or, at least, what was left of him. Blood and sand flew into the air as we pulled Eric's corpse from the ground. Something had in fact been pulling him under, and it took everything above his chest with it. Eric's upper body was now lacking his head, neck, and shoulders. Jagged bites of bone poked out from the arteries, squirting small streams of blood from his torso.
Oh, Christ!
I exclaimed as we stood up, mortified by the mutilated corpse of my friend.
What the hell just happened?
Randall's eyes had widened into baseballs.
We need the radio back to camp. We gotta get back to the car, Randy. Come on.
I took off running, waving my hands towards Randall, gesturing for him to follow me. However, Randall did not follow me. Instead, after about 5 paces, I heard a soft Australian voice behind me.
Pete, run!
Randy's face was expressionless, and he was up to his shins in sand.
No!
Before I could do anything, my friend was dragged into the ground by an unseen force, throwing a cloud of dust into the air, accompanied by his muffled screaming, leaving I and I alone in the vast ocean of sand, hunted by a metaphorical shark beneath the granular waves. There was a moment of silence in the barren desert. I stood froze in shock of what I had just witnessed, questioning how I was even going to make it out alive. However, this despite was short-lived when I felt the sand beneath me begin to shift.
Oh, screw this!
I cursed towards the ground and took off running for the Jeep. My time on the high school cross-country team probably saved my ass that day. I could hear the sand being tossed up behind me, followed by what sounded like a muffled whirring of a drill. I took one glance behind me before diving headfirst into the passenger side of the Jeep. Right on my tail was a massive bulge, burrowing through the ground at my heels. I had just enough time to get myself into the Jeep and slam the passenger door shut before the beast erupted from the sand. I couldn't see the whole thing, but what I could see resembled a 30-foot-long earthworm, with the head almost identical to that of a sea lamprey. My bewilderment was soon replaced with dread as the massive phylac monstrosity shook itself from the earth and collided into the side of the Jeep, causing the whole vehicle to flip onto its side. I screamed in agony as I landed on the driver's side window. A crunch came from my forearm, revealing a small jagged bit of my radius. Nauseated by the sight of the pain, I nearly passed out. However, I was jolted awake by another force exerted on the floor I was lying on.
Thump.
The whole Jeep wobbled, and spiderweb-like cracks formed on the driver's side window as the vehicle teetered back onto all fours of the wheels. Clutching my arm in pain, I did my best to remain silent. The Jeep was now exactly the way I needed it, but another blow from this creature could spell disaster for any chance of escape I had planned. All I had to do was remain silent and still, and perhaps the thing would leave me alone.
Hey,
You boys all right out there? I'm closing in on your location. Gary's distorted Texan voice boomed through the damaged radio, throwing sound into the silence like a wrench into grinding gears. My heart skipped a beat when I heard the radio go off, but it practically stopped when I saw something through the windshield barreling towards the Jeep just below the sand. However, right before it collided with the vehicle, it dove down, going deeper into the earth. Hello? You guys all right? Gary's distorted voice once again filled the silent air. Just then, my eyes caught something in the rearview mirror. A cloud of dust. However, it was not the massive worm this time. Instead, it was being kicked up by a vehicle. Another Jeep. It was Gary. That's when I realized what had happened. The creature wasn't leaving me be. It merely got distracted by a more appetizing meal. I see you guys. Wait a second. What is... Those were Gary's final words. I watched in the mirror as the enormous worm dove out of the sand like a dolphin, impacting the front windshield and then slowly dragging Gary's lifeless body headfirst from the Jeep and then down below the sand. Now, I was really alone. I yanked the power cord from the radio, eliminating any possibility of an unwanted noise drawing the attention of the creature. After about 150 feet behind me was Gary's empty Jeep. I could have made a run for it, but with my messed up arm and knowing the capabilities of this thing I was up against, I decided to sit tight. I'm no religious man, but I was praying in those moments. Roughly 5 minutes after the thing had dragged Gary beneath the dunes, it surfaced again. This time, however, it was coming for my Jeep. It erupted from the sand maybe 4 feet in front of my vehicle and began to slither its way across the metallic surface of the Jeep with a sickening thirp. Its slithering soon became constricting as the worm wrapped its massive body around the entire vehicle, coating it in a vicious yellow slime as sunlight slowly disappeared. There was a loud thumping noise from outside the Jeep, and I thought about how earthworms have 5 hearts. I still wonder how many hearts that thing had. I sat in pure darkness, biting my tongue in order to prevent myself from screaming in terror or pain. The only noise present in the hot, thick air was the groaning of metal, thumping pulse, and sloshing of slime as the monstrosity continued to wrap itself around my shelter. Frozen in horror, I accepted my fate, and I remained sloshed in my driver's seat, clutching my mutilated appendage. Eventually, however, the beast uncoiled itself from the vehicle and dove back down into the earth. Nonetheless, I remained in that position for 8 hours. I had almost drifted off by the time I heard the whirring coming from the sky rather than the ground. I cautiously gazed out of the broken window, and my eyes came across a small black object coming in my direction. I felt like a sole survivor of a plane crash, lost at sea, all hope abandoned, until moments before my eyes shut down one final time, the hum of my Coast Guard helicopter revitalized me. I suppose, however, this wasn't far from the case, because sure enough, a helicopter was closing in on my position. My metallic angel descended from the heavens, landing roughly 20 feet away from the Jeep. When the side doors of the helicopter opened, a man in a navy blue suit and sunglasses walked out onto the sand. He waved at me through the window as he made his way over to the Jeep, followed by 2 armed guards carrying AK-47s and fully covered in black fabric and body armor.
Wait! There's a frickin' worm!
I yelled at him, not wishing to see another gruesome death.
Don't worry, Mr. Anderson. The worm is not present.
The man spoke with a firm yet smooth tone, but hearing him say my name like that sent shivers down my spine. I felt as if Agent Smith was after me and not Neo. Cautiously, I exited the Jeep and walking with the pace of a feather.
How do you know my name?
I questioned as he raised his hand to me. Peter Nicholas Anderson, I am Dr. Frederick Langley, and I'm the man who hired you, he said, spreading his arms with a smile formed across his face.
Oh, so you're the genius behind this cluster,
I shouted, angered by the man's casual tone, wincing at the pain from my arm. Calm down, calm down. You won't want to attract the worm again, would you? He raised an eyebrow and I sensed a threat hidden between the lines.
I'm sorry, please. I need medical attention, not eager to cause more conflict.
I showed my arm to the man, now coated in dry blood with purple tissue surrounding the exposed bit of bone.
Oh, that is gruesome.
Join me in the helicopter. We'll get you patched up. We have much to discuss.
Unfazed by my enjoy, he ushered me into the helicopter. I cautiously followed my employer, suspicious of how lightly he had been taking the incident. He and his guards helped me into the chopper as medics began tending to my wounds. Handing me a glass of whiskey, he sat down in one of the matte black seats opposite of me. The two guards remained standing, and soon enough the whirring of the helicopter blade started up. I was surprised by how well the interior of the helicopter blocked the noise from the blades. This guy was rich. Like, rich, rich.
Peter, I'm dearly sorry about your loss of your friends. We weren't quite expecting to find one of them alive. He took a sip from his whiskey glass.
What are you talking about?
Without responding to me, the man handed over a binder. He nodded his head and took another sip from his glass. I squinted at the man, unsure of his motives. However, I was admittedly dying of curiosity, so I opened the binder and began flickering through the documents with my good hand.
Ha! You're freaking joking, right?
I laughed immediately upon laying my eyes on the contents of the binder.
I am not.
He took another sip of his glass. This time, his voice was deadly serious.
These papers are all full of bullcrap. Unicorns, vampires, none of these frickin' things exist.
The contents of the folder consisted of countless documents surrounding certain monsters presumed not to exist, as well as certain species that were known to have gone extinct. One of the papers discussed a Mongolian death worm. Did you believe in the Mongolian death worm yesterday, Mr. Anderson?
I suppose not.
But I bet you do now.
He smiled, wagged a finger at me, and took another swig before setting his glass on the arm of his chair.
So what? You're monster hunters? And my friends died just so that you could find this frickin' worm? What kind of bullcrap is this?
Not hunters. Researchers. And while it was not my intent to have fatalities, well, let's just say I'd be lying if I said I wasn't expecting a bit of collateral damage.
Wait, you're telling me you're expecting people to die?
Peter, in the ocean, we could send submarines to the sea floor in search of life that had never seen the light of day. However, when something is rumored to live beneath the earth, he trailed off, leaving me to put two and two together.
So you need people to draw it out of the ground. You used us as bait.
I leaned forward, glaring at the infuriating man sitting in front of me.
Well, when you put it that way.
He picked up his glass with a smirk and took one last gulp, finishing the drink.
So what do you want from me, huh? Why didn't you leave me for dead?
I sat back, worried that I had narrowly escaped one monster only to meet my maker at the hands of a completely different kind of monster. I would like you to sign this NDA, and I would like to offer you a job. I wasn't quite prepared for this outcome, but someone with hands-on experience could be of use to me. And you have an expressive resume, Mr. Anderson. He handed over a clipboard for me to sign.
What are my other options?
You can accept my offer, or I could leave you here for the worm.
You suits are all the frickin' same. Screw me!
I scuffed and shook my head as I reached out to accept the clipboard. This was the first time I met Dr. Frederick Langley. It was the beginning of the most terrifying period of my life. But in that period of time, I was lucky enough to see things that no one else had seen before. I've been the doc's right-hand man for the last 15 years. Throughout that period of time, I was content without sharing the bizarre and gruesome things I had seen. However, now that Dr. Langley is gone, I feel like I need to share my story, as well as his, with the rest of the world. It's a long one, but I assure you, it'll pique your interest.
Well, I hope that you guys enjoyed the new creepy tale tonight. I've never heard of a Mongolian death worm before. If you have, let me know your opinions in the comments below. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Share me with your friends, and again, like always, spread me like butter.